As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your alternative talk radio contact, the planet, KGRARadio.com.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro of the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
You know, I watch all these shows now. I'm actually looking at Don Keating now because I'm getting in the Bigfoot vibe.
Good.
You know who Don Keating is, right?
Oh, yes, I sure do. And in fact, that's a great way to kind of open up the Bigfoot side of it because in our emails back and forth about this, when you start out like, hey, I got some family experiences in Ohio. And then kind of at the end, and we've been talking for a while over email and finally we're doing this. So this is great. But you did mention that one of the only other people that has heard this would be the great Don Keating. And
Absolutely.
Just explain to everybody who that is if they don't happen to know.
Well, Don Keating is a Bigfoot researcher. He's from around Newcomerstown, Ohio. And he's been involved in looking for the grass man, if that's what they call him, and Bigfoot. He's been on Monster Quest and several shows in reference to Bigfoot in Ohio. So he's pretty well known. I don't know how active he is anymore, but I emailed him. Let's see, I saw him in Monster Quest. So I emailed him and told him some of my family's experiences. And we went back and forth a couple times. He was kind of interested in what I had to tell him. So that was about it.
Yeah, I don't know if he's active anymore either, which is really a bummer because he, I've never heard a bad word muttered about him. And I know he was very passionate about the subject. So
I think people, when they get this, doing this a long time, they get frustrated with, well, people bad mouthing them and people faking stuff. I don't know. I've not looked for Bigfoot. I've seen him. You know, I don't go looking for him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And you know what? That's a great point that you bring up, because I think that when you are in it for a long time, it can just beat you down. The politics, there are Bigfoot politics. And as you said, people mm-hmm. bad-mouthing, and you can't please everybody no matter what you do. So I could see where it could get very tiresome if you're in it 20, 30, 40 years, whatever it is. So absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
so
wherever you want to start, whatever background you want to give, and you can leave out specific locations if you're more comfortable. I'm totally fine with that.
No, it's fine. it's fine because Ohio's a pretty big state. So we're going back to the 70s when I was a kid. And my dad was working for Ford Motor Company in Cleveland, Ohio. And we were living in Ashland, Ohio. But my dad, we had a small farm and he wanted to have a bigger dairy farm. And we were looking for farms. And keep in mind, this is like 73. I was, you know, me and my siblings were all little kids. So we find a farm between Coshocton and Millersburg. Now, I'm going to use some different names in reference to these farms so we can keep them apart. We bought a farm from this this family called the Millers. So and when we talk in a family, we always talk the Miller farm, even though we owned it. And we had Holstein cows, and that's where our main business was, farming. All tractors, dogs, everything, chickens. Back in the day, you know, a lot of farmers were struggling and there was a lot of auctions going on. So we went to an auction. This is about 74 now. We'd lived there at the Miller farm about a year, year and a half. We went over to this farm that was owned by the family called Stokes. It's probably 15 miles from where we live. My dad's buying a lawnmower or something, but they're selling everything. So my dad ended up buying their whole operation. Anyways, so we eventually keep our business over at the Miller farm. We rent the Miller farm house out. We're living at the Stokes farm. This is where things start happening, okay? So the Stokes farm is our nearest neighbor is probably 5 miles away. And it's very desolate. It's out in the middle of nowhere. Beautiful rolling hills. And I'm attending a school called Keene Elementary. So one day we're at recess. And behind the school is the playground. Behind that is a fenced pasture for horses. There's horses there. Behind that is like a field. And then there's dense woods. So I'm about 9, I guess. We're playing on the playground. There's two teachers out there watching us. And they're staring at the woods. And they start yelling at the kids, gathering the kids up. So we all start looking at what they're looking at. And there's this hairy man, probably, I'd say, 400 yards away from us, standing at the wood line just watching us. So I don't know what this is because I'm not exposed to the Patterson-Gimlin film. I don't know anything about Bigfoot. I don't know what this is. I really don't know what this is. But they gather up the kids, you know, playtime's over. But I remember that happening and them talking about it for a long time. That's just one story. This is probably 1974, Keene Elementary, which is between Millersburg and Coshocton. It's a very small town, very rural, very small. So now we're living in the Stokes farm. We're going back to the Miller's farm to milk our cows. Okay. My older sister's about 13 at the time. She stays home to cook dinner for us. And there's a phone that's linked to our milking operation. If there's a problem or she needs something or we need to talk to her, you can communicate. Well, my sister calls one night and she says, Dad, there's a man walking around our house. He's like, what do you mean? She's like, this big guy is walking around our house. So my father jumps in our truck, my older brother and myself, we go over there. It's, you know, wintertime, maybe February. It's dark by 6:30, 7 o'clock. So we're walking around the house with flashlights. We don't see a guy, but we see footprints. Big humanoid, we didn't measure them, footprints. Which my dad is like, somebody's pulling a prank. Now who's going to do that? Maybe somebody would probably do that. But keep in mind, farmers in Ohio and elsewhere are always armed. My dad had a rifle in his truck at all times. Right. You know, always armed. That would be foolhardy to do. So that happens a couple times, and then it stopped happening. Now keep in mind, this whole time at night, you would hear screams, hoots, hollers at night. And I'd always ask my dad about it. He's like, it's this, it's a fox, it's this. But in hindsight, as we talk about it as a family, we know it was something different. So this stuff's going on. We're still living there. It's still going on. And we're very active farmers. We plow, we milk cows, we bale hay. We do all this. And this is a very rural area. So again, my sister is 13, 14 years old. she's a girl, so she's not plowing fields. She's not milking cows. She stays home with my mom for the most part. So my dad and I are on a section of our land. Now, keep in mind, we have 400 acres. So we're plowing a field or discing a field. This is a long time ago. And my father keeps a rifle on the tractor to shoot groundhogs or whatever, you know. Well, I sound pretty country, don't I?
No, it sounds, so I mean, sister, it sounds like a lot of work, but it sounds nice. I mean, but 400 acres, that's a lot of land.
Yeah, it is. So my sister was able to drive, not legally, but she would bring up iced tea or sandwiches to us while we're working. So we can see her at the end of the field, and it's 500 yards away from us where she's at and where we're at. We're working. I'm sitting on the tractor with my dad, and the truck's parked there, and she's picking blackberries. So we don't take notice of that. We know when we get over there and we stop, we'll have lunch. We look up again. My sister's running towards us, waving her arms. So my father wheels the tractor off, thinking there's a problem. As we meet, she's screaming. She's out of breath. She's like, "Dad, that big hairy guy, he's right over here. He's right over here." He's staring at me. My dad's like, "What are you talking about?" "Dad, I was picking blackberries, and the big hairy guy, the big hairy man that was looking in the windows, he's right over here." So we go over there. My father grabs a rifle, walks into the woods. It's very dense woods. Doesn't find anything. Of course, it's branches and everything on the ground. So there's no footprints. So that's my sister's encounter. I didn't see it then. On the backside of that particular piece of property, I sent you a picture of that graveyard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fence that separates our property and that graveyard called Knob Hill. And it was kind of a fascination with myself and my siblings because it's a graveyard. And we used to creep each other out. We used to go there and visit and jump that fence and walk around because it was an old, old graveyard, you know, 1800 graveyard. Again, I was working with my father. He had stopped to do something with the tractor, do some repair. And I walked over there. And I'm walking along the fence line. And I hear what sounds like a grunt, but is more of a chest thing, like a rumble. And I look up, and it's standing there looking at me. And it is huge and dark and hairy. And it's staring at me, and it's probably 25 yards from me. It's in the woods. And I'm petrified. I'm 10 years old. I'm mortified. And then it turns and starts walking away, but it keeps turning and looking at me as if to keep an eye on me, like I'm going to come after it. And walks off into the woods. And I went and told my father, and he's like, "Yeah, Tom, you saw a bear." I said, "Dad, that wasn't a bear." So I know what I saw.
I mean, so you say huge, and it's hard because, you know, you're 10 years old, and anything could seem bigger. How tall do you think it was?
My dad was 6'4", probably 225 pounds. I thought my dad was Andre the Giant. I thought my dad was the biggest, toughest guy in the world. This thing would tower over my father. My dad was 6'4", so 7.5 feet tall.
Wow.
It was immense. If you ever see anything that big, it's startling. And it took my breath away. I don't think I was even breathing. I was looking at it. I was thinking how powerful and how big it was and how almost human it was. My little mind couldn't figure that out because, again, I wasn't exposed to Bigfoot. I wasn't exposed to any of that. This is my first exposure, and I had all these questions. Had somebody told me that this thing was around the world or around the United States, it would probably have been a little bit easier for me to comprehend, you know?
Yeah.
I would have said, it'd be like the first time anybody showed somebody an elephant, and they'd never even heard of an elephant before, you know? They'd be like, "What the hell is that?"
Yeah, that would be right? Very, very shocking. So as far as the face goes, Tom, it's because you're now well ingrained into Bigfoot, and you hear people say either it was more gorilla-looking or human-looking or somewhere in the middle. What do you think?
It didn't have a human nose at all. It had a flat nose. But here's the thing about it. It had like I don't want to come off the wrong way. You know how you see certain African Americans have white spots, discoloration on their skin?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what they call that.
Kind of like what Michael Jackson you know, he had a lot of those kinds of
discolorations. It was splotches of it. It had one on his face. His face was very dark, but it had a discolored spot on his face and his hand. And I remember how it was pushing limbs and stuff out of its way, but it kept an eye on me. It was watching me. I don't know what it was doing there, but I just wandered over there. So I noticed that about it, which was again, I'm going to tell you this, Shannon, and this sounds stupid. I grew up on a farm. I didn't see black people till I was like in middle school. You know what I'm saying? My entire class is all white kids. So like I said, you don't get a lot of farmers in the area who are African-American. So, but the skin was very dark. The nose was flat. But the eyes were like, how do I say this? You could tell that there was some kind of reckoning. He was looking at me. He was interested in me. And you could tell that he was checking me out, you know, like, not like to eat me or something, but to figure out what I was doing over there. You
Are
know?
You sure
that sounds
about
weird,
that? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, maybe he was. I was a little kid.
How long had you been, you know, walking around that fence line and had been in that particular area before you saw him?
Minutes. Because, like I said, I don't know why, but the graveyard was a fascination to me and my siblings. We used to go play around, spook each other out. We'd all take off on it. Like, kids like to be scared. So I just wandered over there. And there's, like I said, about a 2.5 foot, 3 foot little fence, all rusted, the separator. It was like a boundary fence, if you will.
Right.
And it was called Knob Hill Cemetery. And it was like a big hill that went up, and then all the graves were on top. So if you kept going past that, that was our property. Minutes. I mean, again, Shannon, this was how many, 40 years ago, 74, 75. So, you know, that continued. We could continue hearing things, and then it just kind of dissipated and went away. But in newcomers down where Don Keating is, that's his, you know, where around where he lives. And now back in the day, we'd go there, auction off cows, Amish, a lot of Amish around there. And the Amish, the grown men and the Amish would talk about this thing that was going on. And I remember an Amish guy, because keep in mind, you're a kid. You're not really privy to adult conversations, but you're around. And I remember some old Amish guy talking about it, saying that these people, he said, have been around long before any of us came here. So, you know, the Amish have been there forever. So in their minds, they're like, well, these people have been here forever. They were here before us. So
any other details from them as far as any encounters that they had with them?
The Amish, I wasn't in the investigator mode at 10. You just hear things. I don't know what the adults were talking about, or, you know, maybe shooting it, whatever. But again, at 10, you're not sitting in a picnic table discussing things with adults. You're 10 years old. You're playing Frisbee and running around. But I did hear some things about that. Again, Don Keating's from that area. I told him all that. He was interested in that. Again, it's you used to live in Ohio.
Yep.
Correct?
I did.
Up by Cleveland, I presume.
Yeah, it was Westlake, and then we'd have to, of course, drive south to get into any kind of woods areas, any dense woods.
Yeah.
But
so that's pretty fairly close to West Virginia and Pennsylvania, wooded, very rural. But that's about it as far as, now I have two other things, something happened to my brother, not Bigfoot related, I
now,
think you'd be interested in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Before you go there, though, as far as the encounter with you near the graveyard, was it, do you remember, you may not, but was it silent as it walked away? Or quiet, you know, really quiet? Like, do you remember hearing thuds or anything
well,
like
except
that?
Well, except for as big as it was, and it's stepping, crunch, crunch, crunch.
Yeah.
And it kind of kept looking at me to see what I was doing. I was petrified. I was standing there. Like I said, when I first heard it, it was a rumble almost in his chest, like a, if you ever heard a big dog growl or mm-hmm. something, you know, that big baritone chest. I don't recall hearing anything else, but it was definitely there. It was definitely big. Like I said, it had kind of a white spot on its hand, or a lighter color spot on his face.
I wonder if those
were,
that's what I remember. maybe scars that just they wouldn't heal over the rest of the color of the face or the hand. You know, I wonder if that was more like a scar tissue situation.
Could have been. But, you know, in hindsight, I look back on that and I relive this, and my family talks about it. Like, we get together on Sundays. I live close to my mom and my brother and my sister. And it comes up fairly frequently. And we're just like, it's a matter of fact. It's like, yeah, that's something was going on, whether it was a transient animal or there's a bunch of them or who knows, but I don't know.
Now, what about your dad? Because your sister had, you know, had a couple of weird things go on that obviously frightened her. There was the footprints around the house. And then you, you know, at one point coming up and saying, "Dad, I saw this thing." And he's like, no, that was a bear. Do you think that he was also just not familiar with the term Bigfoot and what that would have been?
I think you're right about that. But here's the thing. I think my dad was a big masculine guy, and he kind of played it off. But I think deep down he knows, because he lives in another state, and it's come up a few times, and he's kind of warmed up to the idea, though he doesn't talk about it a lot, you know. But my mother, my siblings, were all like, definitely, we know. Because we used to, it was like hearing monkeys at night sometimes, you know. And that's not a fox. That's not a cow. It's not a horse.
Monkeys, like,
you know, there's not exotic animals in Ohio.
Like a gibbon, maybe? Like, ooh, 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 ooh. You know, like more like that sound?
Hoots.
Okay.
Hoots and screams. Like when I hear that, the Sierra sound and all that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I've heard that before.
You've heard the chattering.
And the chattering. And it was scary. Because you just don't know. And your father's like, oh, it's this.
Right.
And another thing, in the winters, you know, winters are bad in Ohio. And cows are the dumbest animal in the world. It's snow. Our fences would go down. The cows would wander off. Instead of staying in a warm barn, the cows would wander off, or a few of them would. So we'd get this alarm that the fence is down. It's an electric fence. So we'd have to go out looking for our cows in the middle of the night. And keep in mind, you're 8, 9, 10, 12 years old, tromping through the snow. We'd all have to split up, you know what I'm saying? And we'd have to go out and find these cows.
Cursing
those
cows. And
that kind of stuff was always, those cows. those dumb animals. Dumb animals, let me tell you, dumb. Why would you leave a warm barn for, you're not going to go graze on snow anyways. But we all would look at each other. My dad'd say, all right, Tom, you go here. Rick, you go there. Kimmy, you go this way. Your mom and I are going, you know, we'd split up. And I was always terrified. We were always terrified because now we're out in the snow. It's the middle of the night. We're looking for cows with a flashlight, which we all laugh about now. We're like, Jesus.
Because you guys knew what was out there, right? So
we suspected something was out there. And, you know, as a little kid, now it's the boogeyman, right?
Yeah.
Your sister's seen it. Your brother's seen it. We've heard it. We've found footprints. We know something's going on. And my dad's like, bullshit, I'll go do this. Well, even if it's a bear, Dad, I'm 9 years old.
Yeah, still not great. Right? Not great, a great thing to be out there with.
Great parenting skills, Dad. Yeah, great, Dad.
Because what if? Because anyway, they're supposed to be in hibernation, but what if, right? They could be out.
What if, yeah, he missed it, and he missed his meal, and he's going to eat a 9-year-old now.
Yeah.
So again, we look back on this, because we all made it through. It wasn't like it was the worst thing in the world, you know, but it was an interesting life. And in 75, 76,
but,
this was 74. Yeah.
Sorry. Before I forget this, something else about, your close encounter, that rumble, do you think that was bordering on an ultrasound type of a situation?
You know, I've listened to your show and I've heard people talk about it. I think it was, because I could almost not, again, I'm going back a lot of years. You could almost feel it, because I wasn't looking that way. I was looking over the fence, contemplating jumping the fence and wandering around this graveyard again. And it was almost like I felt it. And it was a rumble that I could feel, and immediately turned my head, and it was there, stared at me. Mm. And it was big. You know, compared to my father, oh, easily a foot or two over his head, twice as wide. You know, all my brothers and I are big guys. My dad's a big guy. Just puny compared to this thing.
If it hadn't
especially
made
to a 10-year-old.
Right. If it hadn't made a noise, would you, you know, have even maybe looked around and seen it was there?
Who knows? Maybe if it would have just start walking off, I would have heard that because it was definitely a heavy animal. I wouldn't even guess at the weight, but you could tell just by its weight and its footfalls that it was big and it was noticeable. I would have heard that.
And it had no hair on the top of its hands then?
It had, like I said, sparse hair. Like some humans have hair on their hands.
Yeah.
Like I don't, but some people have a little hairier hands. It was definitely more than that, but it wasn't completely covered.
Yeah, it's interesting because then you could still see that discoloration. Yeah.
Yeah. It might have been a scar, like you said. Who's to know? And as far as the smell, I wouldn't say that it, because I was around horses and big bovine animals. You could smell, it was an animal, had the animal smell. I wouldn't say that it was stinky like the skunk ape, but it definitely had a very strong mammal smell to it. You know, if you've ever, and you, maybe you haven't, been around cows or horses, they give off this smell.
Yeah.
Almost, you don't even have to be right next to them, just close proximity
it's
to
like
them.
It's like earthy almost, but a little more pungent, right? It's just
a little more
just
pungent.
Something about it.
They perspire, they sweat, yeah. They're dirty sometimes, mostly. So that you could tell that you were in the presence of a living mammal organism that was big enough that you could, it had a scent about it, you know?
Now, before we scooch on to your brother stuff, which I also would love to hear about, you guys had, obviously, the Miller farm that you owned originally had the cows, right? But then you moved to the Stokes farm. What kind of animal, did you keep any animals there? You know, did you have dogs?
No
and
animals
stuff like
there.
That? No animals there. Okay.
We had dogs. And the dogs were always raised in hell, you know, when this thing starts screaming. And our dogs weren't necessarily inside dogs. They were dogs. We wouldn't keep them out in the, you know, they'd go down to the basement, keep warm because they were dogs. Now, I love dogs, but we had like four or five of them. They were big dogs and they were always raised in hell, but we kept no other animals over there. We would go work the Miller farm, live at the Stokes farm. And the Stokes farm was very rural. And that's when all that was going on. You know, that's where I saw my sister saw him. We heard things, footprints, and then in 77, we moved to Florida for a little while. So, and then, you know, that was the end of it.
So the cows, though, at the Miller farm, there was never any missing or any of them killed in a weird way, nothing like that?
I'm trying to think about that. I don't think so. I don't think anything, you know, was preying on them. We're talking a 15-mile difference, which isn't a lot. I don't think, but it was more, there was more people around. I'm not saying it was densely populated, but our nearest neighbor was probably 1 mile away compared to the Stokes farm, which was our nearest neighbor was 5 miles away. We're talking,
that's a big difference.
We're talking grass growing up in the middle of the road. You could sit in the road for hours and no traffic would come by. You see a tractor once in a while, an Amish buggy, a pickup truck. Nobody really drove cars. Pickup trucks, they're farmers, you know?
Now, to utilize your own name in this, but do you think there was any tomfoolery going on with, as far as the fences going down and things? And of course, the side note to that is, if it was in the winter, you would see the footprints. But do you think there's anything weird about that situation, like it was on purpose, or that was just weather-related?
It was weather related because you've spent some time in Ohio. You know that lake effect. It's bad.
Oh, it's brutal. Terrible.
You would, and we're talking brutal, brutal. Our power would go out, Shannon. We wouldn't have power for 7 or 8 days.
Oh God.
You would now. We're talking the '70s. We put a man on the moon. We would have a Bunsen burner, or we'd have to heat up food that way. And it sounds very primitive, but we had electricity. We had TV, three channels. we were modern people. It wasn't like we were living in a cave, but those winters were so bad, they would knock the fences down. And for the life of me, I don't know why a cow or any animal would leave the comforts of a barn, but they would just wander off. Not the whole herd, three or four of them,
yeah,
would wander off.
The real special ones.
Yeah, we have to go find these damn cows. And I thought, you know, it could happen in the middle of the night. My dad, all right, we got to go. I'd lay in bed going,
oh here we go again. Well, what about your mom?
I'm going to go.
Now she talks about it, but what about back then? Because she had to have also heard the stories back at that time, and especially once the footprints are like right outside the house, and it scared your sister that time before she had actually seen one.
Yeah, well, my mom, she talks about it a lot now. Of course, we're all older. My mom's 81. But my father was in charge. And if he didn't want to hear it, we didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He was kind of I'll put it this way, he was kind of a prick. You know, he was always in charge. I love my dad, but we're a little estranged. He's old too. But back in the day, he was in his 30s. You know, whatever age he was, but he was a young man, but he was kind of a hard ass, you know, so any kind of talk like that.
It's farm life, like no muss, no fuss. You got a lot of stuff to do, right? So you can't be talking about silly things like that.
Yeah. I remember I heard something or read something in the paper about the Loch Ness Monster, which as a kid, I was really into dinosaurs. It totally blew me away that there'd be a dinosaur in my young mind in a lake in Scotland. So I read it, I'm all excited, telling my father this, that we're having lunch or something, and he just completely shut me down. He just, bullshit, shut up, I don't want to hear about it. So that was kind of his mentality. And since he was such a domineering figure in the family, that kind of talk happened, but it was very short-lived.
Right.
He would shut it down real quick.
Right.
So because of that, my mother was very, I guess, would be called submissive in situations like that.
Right.
So there was talk amongst ourselves, and we talked about it a little bit, but my father always put the kibosh on that for whatever reason. Now he's a little more open to it. He's an old man now, you know, so he's a little more open up about that, you know?
Oh, that's cool. It is funny how time changes things, you know, and it can sometimes soften people to that kind of thing. Now, I know personally because I've been in the state, I've lived in the state, but in relation to those two farms, what kind of water sources did you guys have around there for something as massive as that to be sustained?
There was a small river called the Black River. I wouldn't compare it to like the Ohio River or anything, mm-hmm. but there was water, there was lakes on our property. It was two or three lakes. So there's water around. There was, and you know, it's something else I was thinking about. There's a lot of old farms that were, nobody lived there anymore. Old barns were falling down, different things. I believe in these rural areas, these animals stay there once in a while, or a lot, you know, that's what I think. They're in the barns, these old barns. There's a lot of failed farms and old buildings that are still standing. Now, this is a long time ago. I don't know if they're still there. But out in the middle of nowhere, there'd be a barn or like some little structure, you know?
Like, why not utilize that, right?
You would think, right? Also, believe it or not, a lot of caves, as far as like, there's not mountains there, but there's big hills.
Right.
There's a lot of coal mining around that area, strip mining. So I think they just take advantage of what's they have around them, and that's how they get around. I don't know. I'm not an expert. That's my opinion, though.
You're close-up sighting. I mean, you did already mention that it definitely scared you, but did that change how you felt about just where you lived and change your daily activities for a while, or did you just have to suck it up and, you know, do everything the same?
Well, My father's very imposing. And like I said, he's like, oh, bullshit. But in the back of my mind, I knew, and I was terrified, as were my siblings. But early on in my life, I was taught how to use a rifle. So I wasn't the kind of guy that went out hunting, but my older brother was. And this will lead to another story. He's about a year older than me, so he's kind of a hunter type. He'd go shoot groundhogs, and he wouldn't shoot deer or anything. He was a kid, but we would go deer hunting. But I'm not a hunter now. But it was always in the back of our minds. Always, we didn't stray too far from our parents or anything. And some of the neighbor kids, and I say neighbor kids, they didn't live down the road, but they lived miles away. You went to school with them. We were always kind of leery of the woods, always kind of in the back of our minds, not to stray too far, to always be with somebody. It was kind of scary.
I just, you know, when you talk about it a lot, it's one thing to talk about it. You can talk about it for 50 years and still not have any clue what that's like to be that close to something that large. I mean, do you feel really super lucky to have seen something like that? And would you want to see one that close again?
I tell you what, I feel fortunate to see something like that, because that is a once in a lifetime thing, you know. Would I want to see it again by myself? No. If you and the small town monster people with me, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Go with a group.
You know what I'm saying?
Smarter.
If I saw the group and it ran across a field, yeah, I'd say, Shannon, look at that shit. Personally, yeah. If I'm out, like not that I go in the woods by myself,
right,
but if I was out wandering around and looked up, it was there, you know, I'd be terrified again. Because
like this again.
This is an animal that could pull your arms off easily. This is an animal that could take you apart. Now, I'm going to bring something up to you. I got two questions for you.
Yeah.
Have you heard about anything in Portlock, Alaska? Have you looked into that?
Portlock, Alaska. I have not. I definitely will
look
it up.
There are so many stories. Port Chatham in Portlock, Alaska was a just Google it. It's terrifying. There's big
Chatham. Why does that sound familiar?
Okay.
That
well,
does.
There's Chatham, Ohio, but here's the story in Port Chatham. Local people, some Navy officer in the 1700s, British Navy, found this little port because there was a bad storm. I'll make this as brief as I can. And he said, hey, this is a nice place. So people start to inhabit it in the early 1900s. They build a cannery there because there's somebody that's right by the ocean, and they're bringing loggers in, and people were living there. They put a post office there, and people start disappearing. And people start, they start finding people torn apart, people dead, and people seeing Bigfoot, and this animal's on a raging homicidal. In fact, those two towns disappeared. Everybody moved away because of this.
Mm.
I think the town was empty by 1950, but you need to look into that, because that is a scary, scary, scary story.
That's why Port Chatham is something that is ringing a faint bell somewhere back there. But so they were finding people ripped up, huh?
Oh, my God. People would go hunting for sheep and they disappear.
Oh.
And this, you know, this happens to this day. But mm-hmm. The local Indians knew what this was. And they were like, no, we're not working here anymore. We're leaving.
Wow.
The Indian people left because this animal or animals were so aggressive and killing people.
Well, and the natives, the Indians probably were going, we know exactly what this is and we're not screwing around with it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, when I don't know how your day goes today or if you got to work, but Google that and read those stories. And there's nobody living there now. You can go there, but there's nobody there. There's this old ghost town that was... is a ghost town because the Sasquatch chased everybody off.
Was the thinking
chased
that it was a single rogue Sasquatch or a group of them?
They don't really... keep in mind, this is the 30s, 40s, and 50s. They're not looking at the PG film. They're like, what the F is this?
Right.
But there's a multitude of stories and eyewitnesses and handed down stories from, you know, people saying, well, my parents lived there. They moved because, and everybody's like, we moved because of this animal. They didn't move because we wanted to go to Florida. They moved because of this animal was killing people.
Well, yeah, especially when you have a group of people that are trying to really lay roots there. Like you said, they even had a post office built at one point, so they were trying to really stay there, and it just didn't work out as such.
you got to read these stories, because they will, I tell you what, if you want to, if you like a good chill, read these stories, because we all read Bigfoot stories and watch the documentaries, and they're chilling enough. But this animal was killing people, attacking them, killing dogs, killing people. And just the intent was to chase these people off. And it chased a whole community, two communities off, Portlock, Alaska, and Port Chatham. And if you ever get a few minutes, Google that and read that on the internet, because that's pretty scary stuff.
Sounds like an interesting episode for me to do. Thanks for bringing that up.
That's exactly.
Now,
interesting.
This is kind of going to a slightly dark place, but that's how we like to roll. We go a little dark. Yeah. You were really close to that thing, and as big and powerful as it was, and as stealthy as we heard that they can be. This ties in with basically what you just said about Port Chatham and people going missing. You know about the missing 411 situations, I'm sure, the very strange situations that go on there.
Absolutely.
And taking this more of the strangeness out, just the sheer power and, you know, I'll handle business if this is the business I want to handle with a creature like that. Do you think that if it wanted to take you, would anybody have heard a peep from you? Would anybody even know
Nothing.
Where you went?
No, I'd be a stat line. It could have had me and gone, and my father would have turned around and said, "Where the hell's my son at?" It'd have been an hour or two before anybody could start looking for me.
Right.
Outside my family, I would have been gone. And I didn't see it move fast, but it was okay. Have you ever been close to a horse?
Yes.
See the muscles ripple in a horse.
Yes.
And know that that thing is built for speed. It was kind of like that. You could tell. This thing was not, it wouldn't mess around. There's nothing that would rival its power in Ohio anyways, you know. There's no grizzly bears in Ohio.
So it's over 7 feet tall. How far across do you think the shoulders were at the widest point?
So I would say, God, it was a long time ago, 3 or 4 feet. It was huge.
Yeah.
It was huge.
Big old legs on it?
Massive.
Like tree trunks?
Big, powerful legs. Looked like a running back, you know, like mm-hmm. Just a powerful, the muscles and the power to it was just evident. And I was like 10. I was just like, I don't think I was even breathing, but I was thinking, oh my God, you know? Oh my God. Oh my God. And I was wondering if I could just take off running, but it would have caught me if it was chasing me. But it didn't indicate any malice or anything. It was just watching me. And then it just turned and walked away. And I was like terrified. And I said, take off running, go find my dad. Of course, he's working on some farm equipment and he doesn't want to hear it. He's like, Thomas, knock that shit off. You probably saw a bear. Chill out. Go get me this, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you're immediately poo-pooed and you're like, oh, okay, whatever. I'll quit telling him stuff.
Exactly. I was going to say, you learn really quickly just to keep your mouth shut, huh? And just get on with your day.
Yeah. But now as adults we all talk about it. We all go over the same stories and the same details, and we're having dinner and we're talking about it. Now keep in mind, my sister has a boyfriend, my brother has a girlfriend, and they're looking at us like, who the hell is wrong with these people?
You guys talk about weird stuff. You're like, well, it's not weird.
Exactly. I mean, Bigfoot comes up and it's out of the blue. Because I told my mother I was going to be talking to you. And then my mother goes, oh, well, you know, Tom, they're out there. They're all, you were there. You heard stuff. I'm like, Mom, I know.
Yeah, you're like, I'm more than heard stuff.
Exactly. We've talked about this for hundreds of times, Mother.
I'm sorry, so, yeah, sir. So I keep taking the train off the tracks as I do, but I have another question.
No.
When you guys went to the Miller Farm from... And you left your sister there, that's when the thing came up close to the house and it was peeking around the house. So was it watching and then, you know, oh, there go the males of, you know, of the clan, and they left the girl there.
I'm going to tell you something. If somehow I could take you and show you this farm. Now, I don't know if there's houses built around it now. It might be developed. But back in the 70s, it was a creepy old farmhouse. And she was there making dinner because we had to milk the cows twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening. So that was part of our routine. And keep in mind, in February in Ohio at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night, when she's preparing, we're going to get home by 8:30. We're farmers. We eat late. It's dark. We're getting dark. And that's when this thing would creep around. And it probably saw us leave and was just curious and walking around. I don't think it had intent of stealing my sister because she's pretty mean. He wouldn't want any of that. But you know what I'm saying? I think it was observing. I think it's curious.
They definitely like to watch.
Back to Keene Elementary, all those little kids running around screaming.
Yep.
That's what brought that thing out. He was like, what the hell's all that noise? Oh, it's kids.
I bet that thing went quite often to that wood line to watch what was going on in that playground.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, I remember the teachers and talking about it. I remember the kids talking. Again, this is, Bigfoot is so popular now. We're talking the mid-70s where it's like, what are you talking about? You know?
Right.
Boggy Creek thing had come out, but again, you know, it was a limited at the time. Seeing that, I've seen it since. The exposure as far as what people know about that back then was nil.
Right.
They didn't know what that was. And it was just standing inside the wood line and watching, and the teachers saw it. And then the kids saw it, and then the teachers were grabbing up the kids. You know, recess is over. Hey, we got 15 more minutes. No, we're going now. So,
gosh.
I'm actually watching on the trail of Bigfoot right now.
Not a bad show. I think I know a couple people in there.
Yeah. I'm kind of a little starstruck to talking to you.
Oh,
you're in a lot of
don't
stuff.
Be. I'm just a big old nerd. I love talking to folks that love to talk about this stuff like I do. So, and I appreciate anybody willing to come forward. Yeah, your brother's stories.
Let me tell you what my brother saw. So.
All right, guys. Well, a big thank you to Thomas, of course, for coming on. And as you heard, he stuck around after and he had several more stories to share. And those are available for my Patreons. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/intothefray. And of course, if you have any encounters that you would like to share, email me, shannon@intothefrayradio.com.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little biography. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is, because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam by the koans to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. divided on us. They will say, no, we don't believe literally in reincarnation. That after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say, reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you'll be reincarnated. If you are liberated, you will understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it in this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.